It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Where were you on 9/11? Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Yeah, 19 years ago today, the world was changed forever.
We have a breaking news story to tell you about. Apparently, a plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center.
One of those days you never forget, but this year, 9/11 comes in the middle of a pandemic, and that has changed the way we honor those lost.
I don't want to see anybody get sick because of trying to continue a tradition. However, it is a tradition that we cannot lose.
That man lost his firefighter brother on 9/11. Today's remembrance ceremonies were held, as they always are, at the scenes of the crime, Lower Manhattan, the place they call Ground Zero, at the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia, and in a field in Pennsylvania.
In this Pennsylvania field, the 40 intrepid souls of Flight 93 died as true heroes. Their momentous deeds will outlive us all.
President Trump laying a wreath at the Flight 93 Memorial in Shanksville this morning.
The men and women of Flight 93 were mothers and fathers, sons and daughters, husbands and wives. Nothing could have prepared them for the dreadful events of that morning. But when the moment came, when history called, they did not hesitate, they did not waver. 40 towering patriots rose up, took charge, made their stand, turned the tide, and change the course of history forever.
Nearly two decades after 9/11, some fear the awful events of that day are fading from our collective consciousness. Here's correspondent Sean Adams.
On a day typically filled with hugs and tears, this year, masks and distance. Coronavirus has kept retired New York City firefighter Lee Ielpe from coming home to New York to honor and remember his firefighter son, Jonathan Ielpe. 19 years later, Ielpe fears memories are fading. He believes young people born after the terror attacks are not learning what happened.
How can you go to a school and ask students, what do you know about 9/11? And the comeback is, many times, what is 9/11?
Ielpe urges states and school districts to update the history books.
It was 19 years ago today that 15 Islamic terrorists hijacked four commercial jetliners and turned them into missiles, killing 3,000 people, including 400 firefighters and police officers.
It's a day that will always be painful, a week that will always be painful. It just, and that's okay. That's the least we can do to honor those people that we cared so much about.
Former New York City Fire Commissioner Tom Von Essen. Our 9/11 coverage continues with reporter Scott Pringle.
The first responders, New Yorkers, and family members who lost loved ones taking time to remember the nearly 3,000 people killed.
Never forget. There's bad people out there, and they can come back.
Robert reflects back on what he calls love and unity displayed on and shortly after 9/11.
Everybody pulled together, and we have to keep that today. This outside force is trying to divide Americans.
Now, Vice President Mike Pence and presidential candidate Joe Biden among the politicians in Lower Manhattan for the two remembrance ceremonies. Scott Pringle, New York.
Now, Biden and Pence did speak briefly to each other this morning at Ground Zero. They bumped elbows, were told, and exchanged pleasantries. Joe Biden will be at the Flight 93 Memorial in Pennsylvania later on this afternoon. Other news today, at least two dozen deaths now blamed on those western wildfires.
The fires that are going on in the western United States right now are unprecedented. We have not seen this before.
Dozens more are missing in mountain communities of California, Oregon, and Washington. This woman just barely got out alive.
It's right behind us, the mountain was just glowing red. And the ashes is just terrible, sad.
In Oregon, 500,000 people, 10% of the state's overall population, has been forced to flee the flames.
We have never seen this amount of uncontained fire across our state. We see an average of 500,000 acres burn in an entire year. We've seen that nearly double in the past 3 days.
Oregon Governor Kate Brown has asked the Department of Defense to send her a battalion of active duty soldiers to assist in the fight against the fires.
I've never seen anything like this, and I've been through fires, and this is just, I mean, it's a town. It's gone. what can you say? The only thing they can do is here is put it in a big rubble pile and start over.
Several towns have been wiped off the map by the fast-moving fires. Firefighters hoping against hope for weather improvements this weekend. America's colleges and universities appear to be the breeding grounds for COVID contamination across the country. They are driving up the numbers in many communities. Of the 25 hottest outbreaks right now across the USA, 19 are college towns. Any chance for a fresh COVID relief package in Congress got scuttled last night in the U.S. Senate. Democrats and Republicans unable to come together on a scaled-back coronavirus rescue bill. New York Democrat Chuck Schumer.
We've just been waiting and waiting for our Republican friends to get their act together.
It's just silly season on the Democratic side. They've run out of excuses not to legislate.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell calls it partisan politics at its worst. The word is now from Capitol Hill, do not expect any COVID relief bill until after the election. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, mandatory flu shots. It's all online now in Williamsville and health scare in Horseheads. First, weather with Kevin Williams.
Well, good afternoon. The weekend is upon us. Looking like a nice day tomorrow. Not as nice on Sunday. I'll have forecast details coming up shortly.
All right, we'll see in a bit. Thanks, Kevin. New York may make the flu shot mandatory for all public and private school children as well as those who attend daycare. There's a lot of kids there, but the Cuomo administration's considering it because of the coronavirus pandemic.
Each of these viruses is very serious and can be deadly. Infecting an individual simultaneously, we don't know how that would turn out, but I can't imagine it would be favorable.
Dr. Steve Lana is a pediatrician in Western New York and supports mandatory flu shots for kids.
Because we have the potential of having these two very serious, aggressive viruses coexisting in our community at the same time.
Critics say this effort would undermine parental rights. Western New York's largest school district is moving to remote learning only for 5th through 12th graders, and it's not sitting well with many in that Buffalo suburb.
We want school! We want school!
An impromptu rally held last night outside the Williamsville High School. This mom of an eighth grader is outraged.
My eighth grader will not survive this way. Remote learning in the spring was horrible. He became incredibly depressed.
Williamsville interim superintendent Dr. John McKenna.
We have trained all summer to do this model. We have the devices ready to give our kids. We have, completely fully trained our staff. And I'll tell you something, too. I understand what the parents are saying because I also am a Williamsville parent.
The move to online learning was made after a rocky start to the school year in Williamsville. The district reeling from a teacher shortage and the firing of its top administrator just last week. The back-and-forth bickering continues in Harrisburg between Republican lawmakers and the Democratic governor. Tom Wolf now says he will veto GOP-passed legislation that lets schools decide crowd size at high school sporting events.
The schools don't have the ability to unilaterally override the virus that is saying, bring people together. I'd love that. I can't override that virus. I don't know how school districts can override it, and yet this bill pretends that they can. They can.
But lawmakers can override Wolf's veto, and they intend to do just that.
Because the general public is tired of this containment and being having their lives dictated by governors.
House Majority Leader Kerry Benninghoff says Pennsylvanians are tired of Governor Wolf's go-it-alone attitude and his pandemic policies.
We just get told a couple hours before a press conference, by the way, we're going to announce this, we're going to announce that.
We're two different parties. We have some very big disagreements.
The General Assembly is currently in the process of trying to cobble together enough Democratic support to override the governor's latest emergency declaration when it comes to the pandemic. 29 COVID cases linked to a church in Horseheads, New York. Chemung County Executive Chris Moss says, unfortunately, the Lighthouse Baptist Church is not cooperating with local authorities.
We understand that some of the parishioners believe that they don't need to cooperate with the health department because God will look out for them. But the problem with that is they are coming in contact with elderly folks, with children, with family members. And you know what? This is how the cluster grows and grows and grows.
One of the COVID cases linked to that church is an employee at the Ridge Road Elementary School in Horseheads. That school shut down till Monday. A COVID testing site's been set up at the Chemung County Fairgrounds. The New York State United Teachers Union hosted a rally at the state capitol in Albany yesterday to protest proposed 20% across-the-board cuts to public schools.
We're looking at possibly 10,000 cuts by the end of the month.
NYSA President Andy Pilato says elected officials need to act quickly to help struggling schools in the COVID era. Juliet Benacquisto is a public school teacher in the Capital District.
We are opening a shell of a school district. We are not the same school district, and we'll struggle to support our students in the way we need to.
Significant teacher layoffs are possible in Albany, Schenectady, Norwich, Syracuse, and Rochester this year. The Pennsylvania State Senate's approved a bill that would allow expert witnesses in cases of domestic violence and human trafficking.
The bill would amend the judicial code to permit Pennsylvania to call expert witnesses in court cases involving domestic violence and human trafficking in order to provide a clearer picture of the crime and how it impacts victims and affects their behavior. Currently, the code allows expert witnesses to testify in cases of sexual violence about the dynamics of the crime, the victim's response, and the impact of sexual violence on victims both during and after the assault. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
All right, Terry, thank you for that. The NFL season got started with a bang last night. Sports next. It's the two-minute drill with Sonny Delphia.
Yeah, we start in Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes threw for 211 yards and three touchdowns. The Chiefs beat the Texans 34-20 to kick off the 2020 season while raising their Super Bowl 54 banner. Chief Head Coach Andy Reid.
For our first game, you know, listen, there are some good things that were done, some great individual performances, and some young guys that had some nice performances. So, all in all, good day.
To the NBA, the Lakers, who won, went away from advancing to the Western Conference Finals. Anthony Davis can't wait. He scored 29 points to lead Los Angeles to a 110-100 win and take a 3-1 series lead.
It's going to be fun and exciting to get there. You know, we still have one more game to win against, you know, a tough Houston team, but you know, something I'm for sure looking forward to.
Game 5 is tomorrow. To the U.S. Open, Jennifer Brady of Harrisburg put up a great fight, falling in 3 sets to Naomi Osaka, 1 win away from making it to the finals.
I'm pretty happy with myself, with my effort, and in my mentality these past couple weeks.
Naomi Osaka will take on Victoria Azarenka for the championship. Azarenka rallied from a 1-6, 6-3, 6-3 victory over Serena Williams. Serena, out.
Yeah, I started really strong, and then she just kept fighting. She just changed and started playing better and better, and maybe I took a little too much off the gas pedal at some point.
Stanley Cup playoffs. Stars beat the Golden Knights in overtime 2-1. Major League Baseball rookie Brady Singer came within 4 outs of a no-hitter. The Royals crushed the Indians 11-1 in Cleveland.
I felt really good from the start. I think it was about to, probably a bad thing, but I kind of noticed there was no hits, you know, after the third inning. So it was stressful, however many more innings that is. Stressful time. But, you know, I felt sharp from pitch one.
Elsewhere, the Phillies fall to the Marlins 7-6. The Yankees and Baltimore Orioles postponed. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come, where were you on 9/11? The Capital Connection crew is back, and Weekend Weather with Kevin Williams.
Refusing to even consider the ethics of a thing is itself settling on the ethics of a thing. And in this case, the stakes are really high. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Last week, a panel of genetics experts issued a direct and stark warning against editing genes of human embryos that are destined for implantation. The panel, which consisted of experts from 10 different countries, was jointly convened by the U.S. National Academy of Medicine, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, and the U.K. Royal Society. The present state of gene editing, said the panel's report, is simply too risky for both individual embryos and the human race as a whole. While technologies such as CRISPR are fairly precise in targeting and editing certain genes, they wrote, recent ventures have demonstrated that fairly precise isn't nearly good enough. For instance, when researchers at the Francis Crick Institute in London used CRISPR recently to edit 18 human embryos in order to study the role of a particular gene in the early stages of human development, about half of those embryos contained what they called, quote, major unintended edits. Now, that phrase is a euphemism for harmful mutations and genetic damage, the kind that could lead to birth defects and even life-threatening medical problems like cancer, and not to mention could permanently enter the gene pool. One genetics expert described these failures this way. If human embryo editing for reproductive purposes or germline editing were spaceflight, this new data would be the equivalent of having the rocket explode at the launch pad before takeoff. Still, once again, this new report focuses only on the technical failures of gene editing. Once again, any discussion or even any acknowledgement of the many ethical questions inherent to this very idea of gene editing were completely avoided. So now, in what's become far too typical of the scientific culture of our age, in which philosophy and ethics are completely divorced from technology and science, research proceeds with an ethical framework of utilitarianism built on a philosophy of scientism. Or to put it more simply, gene editing will continue because, you know, science is our only real hope to solve problems, and if we can do something, we should. And so, even though this panel admits that it could be years before the technical difficulties of gene editing are ironed out, experiments will continue and should continue, though, quote, initially limited to serious genetic disorders that are caused by DNA variants in a single gene and should be used, quote, only when the alternatives for having a biologically related child that is unaffected by the genetic disorder are poor. Look, scientific hubris is indeed a very tough train to stop. Certainly, an international panel of experts admitting that gene editing is dangerous and unnecessary, but we should proceed anyway as long as it's with caution, that's not going to stop any eager scientist around the world, much less the governments and corporations who are funding them. Now, the sincere desire to eradicate dangerous diseases, including genetic diseases, is understandable. It's even noble. The longing to heal is just a reflection of God's image in us. Ethically sound and medically safe treatments should always be pursued, but we should never proceed without a full awareness of the human temptation to become like God, as Genesis 3 puts it, determining good and evil. After all, couples are already genetically screening donor sperm to create designer babies, and governments, like China, have already demonstrated their willingness to experiment on entire ethnic groups. Now, there is still time to prevent the potential man-made catastrophe of gene editing. Time itself, however, won't be enough unless we have the will to say no. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Let's take it outside next, Kevin Williams. Kevin, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. It's Friday, September 11th. And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Gentlemen, 8 years now we've been doing this program, back by popular demand, as they say. Jason, let's begin with you. Here we are, just over 50 days to go before the election, and those mail-in ballots seem to be on everybody's minds. Will they delay the results? Huge question mark. There's so much at stake in this election. Maybe you can just start by explaining the difference between a mail-in ballot and an absentee ballot and what some of your concerns might be.
Yeah, maybe it's best to look at the three new laws that Governor Cuomo recently signed into law. And the first new law, which we opposed, allows registered New York voters to request absentee ballots if they're concerned about contracting a communicable disease by voting in person. Now, this has been billed as the COVID clause, but it's really as the common cold clause. If you think you could get something by going to the polls, then you can simply request a ballot. Hmm. And so it's going to be very broadly used this year, and we do have concerns about that. The second new law gives voters 7 additional weeks to cast the absentee ballots, while the third allows absentee ballots to be counted if they are postmarked on or before Election Day, are received 7 days after Election Day, or if they lack the dated postmark but are delivered on the day after Election Day. So this really is a broadening of the mail-in voting, if you will, in New York State, and there are some legitimate concerns concerning the safety of the process.
Yeah, and again, some folks are wondering, will it be days, weeks, months maybe? God forbid, before we have a clear-cut winner, not just the presidential race, but so many other races. Michael, your state, I was blown away when I found this out. Your state, Pennsylvania, is one of just 7 states where by law they can't even start counting those mail-in ballots until Election Day. Former Governor Tom Ridge wants to change that law. What are some of your concerns as we get ready for the first ever presidential election smack dab in the middle of a pandemic?
Well, I think Tom Ridge is rightly concerned about that provision in the law. It made sense when that provision was there just for absentee ballots, but like New York, Pennsylvania expanded absentee ballots to allow for mail-in ballots for those who request them for no reason. They don't even have to say they have a cold or a COVID. And then to have such an onslaught of ballots to only be counted on Election Day means a significant delay. And if everyone remembers the 2016 election, it was Pennsylvania in the Electoral College that put President Trump over the top. And if you delay a state like Pennsylvania, a key swing state, in terms of the results for days or weeks, Bush versus Gore is going to seem like a walk in the park compared to what may happen in the courts and otherwise after that.
Oh, boy. Hanging, dimpled, and pregnant chads all over again. Here we go. But, Jason, we've been into this pandemic here for 6 months now. Many are wondering, will we ever go back to the way it was, whether it's school, sports, or even church? You're urging church leaders on your website today to stay the course, to not get complacent. We've seen a few COVID clusters connected to church, but overall, how do you think churches are doing at preventing the spread of this virus?
Well, you know, our organization is just as frustrated as many people across the state with the restrictions that continue to be on us. And yet we are urging vigilance for a number of reasons. A couple of weeks ago, we did see that there were some COVID clusters that broke out in 3 different churches across the state. And while there could also be clusters in other locations, whenever it happens in a church, it's problematic for a testimony perspective, for government control. Nobody wants their church contact traced. And frankly, with schools reopening, we want to make sure that we stay the course so that we are doing all we can to get back to some sense of normal as soon as we can.
Hmm. Governor Wolf, this week, Michael, announcing that starting on September 21st, restaurants can operate at 50% capacity. Is this too little, too late? We're hearing that as many as 70% of restaurants that were shut down may never reopen.
Yeah, I think it may be, and it points out the challenge of sort of these emergency declarations that allow a single person, in this case in Pennsylvania, a governor, to sort of decree and change laws and requirements that businesses and individuals have to meet on a sort of willy-nilly basis. I mean, how can any business plan for the future if they don't know that the governor or this person making these edicts has the ability to change the ground rules of how they operate going forward? It's a major challenge, and I think there will be many, many businesses, and that means many, many jobs that are going to be lost as a result.
Yeah, one of the trends from this virus has been a sharp uptick that we have seen in homeschooling. Given all of the uncertainty right now as to what will happen with schools, if they get COVID clusters, will the whole thing shut down? You've got the hybrid learning, the problems with technology, with the remote learning. So a lot of parents are just saying, hey, we're just going to homeschool now. Jason, what advice are you giving moms and dads who are kind of walking that fine line right now about whether or not to continue with public or private school or whether they are going to homeschool their kids this year?
Well, that is one of the silver linings of this whole COVID crisis, has been the fact that parents are looking at school choice in a whole new way. And so whether it be a private Christian school or it be a homeschool situation, parents are recognizing that they have control over their children's education.
Yeah. The vice president was in Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh area this week, Michael. And this is personal for you because your wife, Susan, instrumental in a pregnancy care center in the Pittsburgh area, that same center was where the vice president was this week. And she actually had an opportunity to be part of that roundtable discussion. Give our audience a little update about what that day was all about.
It was really exciting. The vice president with the Susan B. Anthony List highlighted the Women's Choice Network Pregnancy Care Center, which back in 1985, my wife and I helped found. It opened on Mother's Day of 1985. At that time, it was called the North Pittsburgh Crisis Pregnancy Center. It expanded to now three centers throughout the Pittsburgh area. And it was just gratifying. I was there as well to see the vice president highlight the work of pregnancy care centers. He did the same in Florida and in North Carolina. These are centers, and many of your listeners know about them and probably support them throughout New York and Pennsylvania, that provide help for women who are abortion-minded and considering whether to choose life. And to have these centers out there and to have the vice president to promote centers like the Women's Choice Network there in Pittsburgh was really gratifying to see.
Awesome. What an opportunity that was. Jason, unfortunately, the racial unrest, it just continues, and now it's hit close to home. Rochester, New York is the new epicenter of this ongoing conversation. Such a political hot potato right now. Do you support the Attorney General Letitia James investigation into the death of Daniel Prude? And talk about the Christian response here to this issue, racial justice, law and order, police brutality, however you want to frame it. There are so many moving parts to this story.
Yeah, first to the first question you asked, I do support the investigation from New York's Attorney General. I only wonder why it took so long. Regarding the larger issue, though, I think there's, as you mentioned, so many, many moving parts. I mean, there's a mental health component to this. There's, some drug and alcohol abuse that appears. There's, police situations, all sorts of things. Ultimately, though, I think from my position, I'm really trying to continue to listen. Some of what I am hearing from the protests, I cannot support. I do not support. But there are other voices that I think are trying to speak from the church in Rochester, a reasoned, rational conversation in this. And those are voices that can come alongside and say, help me better understand. Yeah. I'm willing to accept that I do not see everything from my perspective. But at the same time, that does not mean that the other perspective is always 100% correct. Somewhere in the middle, there has to be a place for us to come and reason together.
Amen. And in the midst of the social unrest, Michael, and the pandemic, why not talk marijuana? Let's throw that into the mix. Marijuana legalization, yeah. Why not? So many are saying Governor Wolf is just tone deaf on this one. When you think about the drug addiction, the isolation problems caused by this pandemic, now he's on record pushing for the legislature to make this a top priority this fall.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the same governor that has declared 11 times in a row emergency declarations related to the opioid crisis in Pennsylvania. And yet for the dollar signs, this is what he was talking about. We can raise a lot of revenue if we legalize recreational marijuana. He's ignoring the harm and damage that comes to a society that does it. It's a bad idea across the board. And we have a website, truthonweed.com, that has a lot of detail about the damaging effects that can come with legalization of marijuana.
All right. And speaking of websites, there's a couple other we want to mention before we go here. If you have questions about all the weighty issues coming out of Albany these days, Jason, where can they find you?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
Stay informed as well on the issues impacting you and your family in Pennsylvania. Michael, what's your site, sir?
PAFamily.org.
All right, great to have those two back on the Noon Report. Capital Connection comes your way every Friday during the Noon Report. You can also catch it online, fln.org/podcast. Be sure to click on the news icon.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. As we move into the weekend, high pressure is set to deliver a nice, crisp, chilly night tonight, a bright, sunny, warmer day tomorrow. Then, low pressure, attending a cold front, will arrive with some clouds and showers later Saturday night and Sunday. In the meantime, for this afternoon, cool. Cloudy skies clearing from north to south for sun. Temperatures peaking mostly in the 60s to near 70. Then tonight, where it has not fully cleared, it will clear. And it will turn out chilly. Low temperatures ranging around 50 in the cities and near the shores of the larger water bodies, but down in the low 40s in some of the outlying areas. Tomorrow, sunshine most of the day and turning warmer than today in the 70s to near 80. And cloudy with some showers late Saturday night, Sunday, maybe thunder. High Sunday in the 70s.
All right, thank you, Kevin. And we end this broadcast where we began today with this question. Where were you on 9/11? Earlier today, the Family Life News team assembled in studio to reflect on the day that changed the world.
I remember where I was. I came in the newsroom that morning, September 11th, 2001, eager to write the day's top story. Michael Jordan was coming back to the NBA. And then all of a sudden at 8:46, the whole world changed. And what was important prior to that no longer mattered. Tracy, just give us your reflections. Where were you on 9/11?
Well, I was working in an office, and we had a client actually walk in and say, hey, did you hear that there was a plane that hit one of the towers? And we thought, well, that's really strange. And then another client came in later and said a second plane hit. And we knew at that point that this was no accident.
It was such a beautiful day, and that was my same thought, that couldn't have been an accident. Definitely one of those where were you when it happened moments, Brandon. Just your reflections, you were a little bit younger than Tracy and I, trying to picture Brandon Dixon as a teenager. Talk about your thoughts and reflections here 19 years later.
Yeah, I was in middle school at the time, eighth grade. I was being homeschooled. I was home with my dad and younger sister, and we were actually going over our science lesson for the day when the phone rang, and it was my aunt who was calling because my grandmother happened to be in the air. She was flying to Texas to go see an aunt of mine, and her plane wound up being the last one grounded in the country. It seems almost surreal that we're talking about this 19 years ago, because I can remember when it hit. I can remember the 5-year, the 10-year, the 15-year anniversary, and each year just seems like it flies by, but it doesn't. The distance, that time doesn't diminish the wound. And anytime I go to New York City, it still is there. Like, I can't help but think back to 9/11.
Tracy, yeah, and before we end, you know, I think of this, and this is hard to wrap my brain around, is that there's a whole generation of people now. If you look at a generation being every 20 years, a generation that does not know a world where 9/11 was a part of it. Any concerns that you have that we are forgetting this history and the dangers in that?
Well, I think that kids today are facing a different kind of change in our culture with the whole COVID, that whole unknown, but it's a different kind of thing. I think almost the young kids today in grade school are learning about 9/11 from a history book. So I think it's important that we continue to tell the stories, not gorge on the film footage or anything, but that we do reflect and we think about, how did this happen? Even seeing some of the footage today and remembering how we banded together as a nation. It was beautiful. And we need to have that again. How did it happen? How can we keep ourselves safe in the future? And how can we be a united America?
Tracy Ling, along with Brandon Dixon there with some reflections on 9/11, 19 years later. That's our world for Friday, September 11th. Have a wonderful weekend, won't you? I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.